This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown.
Ooh.
And your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6. All just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, August 22nd, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about J.T. Mulner's new movie, Strange Darling, and we will present interviews with Mulner and the movie's star, Willa Fitzgerald. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor, BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
All right, BJ, this is tough because I don't want to spoil this movie for people. This is a pretty small film, and it's really good. I very much enjoyed it. What did you think about it? Just, like, I guess, before we get any further.
I loved this movie, and I agree with you. I also think this is one of those episodes where we should not dive into a spoiler conversation, because part of the power of this movie is how it plays with your expectations and then subverts them in a very interesting way. Mm-hmm. But I really dug this one. I had heard a little bit of rumblings about it. I know it played, I think, Fantastic Fest in 2023, so some folks saw it there, and it sort of went away, and no one was really talking about it. And then out of nowhere, it's like, oh my God, you've got to see this new movie. It's got Willa Fitzgerald and Kyle Gallner, who I am a massive fan of. And I checked it out and was floored by how good this was.
Yeah, I have a, I guess my relationship with Kyle Gallner is not as in-depth as yours. I've seen him in a handful of things. I remember him popping up briefly in Veronica Mars. I remember watching him in a couple seasons of Smallville back in the day. But he's become, I don't know, like, it seems like one of your guys, right? From the way that you talk about him, not just on this podcast, but sort of in Slack and stuff. Anytime he comes up, he seems to have a big defender in you. So what's your relationship like with him?
Oh, yeah. So I've been following Kyle's work forever because, you know, yes, he was on, like, Veronica Mars, but also he's Colin Gray in Jennifer's Body. So he's, you know, everyone's ultimate emo boyfriend. He's also in the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, which a lot of people love to dog on, and he finds hilarious, which I love. But yeah, he's kind of consistently been this guy who pops up in a lot of these kind of undersung performances. But it was in 2020 when he was in Dinner in America, a movie that I know I've talked about a lot on this show and in other articles. I mean, I have a tattoo of this movie, where he was finally given the chance to carry a movie on his role, him and Emily Skeggs. And it was like, once people saw that movie, it was off to the races. He started popping up in all of these lead roles in indie horror movies. He ended up in Smile, just absolutely been crushing it in the last, like, 5 or so years. So the second, like, Kyle Gallner has become one of those guys where if you look at the trailer for Strange Darling and look at the comments on YouTube, a majority of them are, you had me at Kyle Gallner or some form of that. It was like that run between, like, Dinner in America, Mother May I, The Passenger, like, it incredible run for him.
Awesome. And then, yeah, Willa Fitzgerald, I was even less familiar with her stuff, but I was incredibly impressed by what she was able to do in this movie. And again, we're not going to like get into really any plot stuff or anything. Actually, for the interviews that you have, the studio asked us to not bring up any spoilers, yeah, even in your conversation, which is pretty rare. And a lot of times we're not thrilled when restrictions like that are put on conversations that we have. Sometimes I'll even turn stuff down for the podcast because I just feel like sometimes like what's the point if we can't really get into, you know, some of the nitty gritty that we're actually interested in talking about. But for this movie, it makes sense because I think everybody's doing their best to try to protect the sort of twists and turns that this movie goes on. So anyway, back to Willa Fitzgerald. What was your relationship like with her? Had you seen her in a bunch of stuff before?
As somebody who actually watched the Scream TV series, yes, I was very familiar with Willa Fitzgerald because she's on that. She's also currently on Reacher, which I think is very cool. And that's probably where some of our listeners might have seen her from. But she's another one where I think like Hollywood hasn't figured out quite what to do with her yet, because she is so capable of playing so many different characters, and yet she is so just strikingly beautiful that she doesn't fall into the like character actor box that a lot of people like to shove people in. So they haven't quite figured out what to do with her. I'm hoping that people will see Strange Darling and go, oh, we need to make her like the lead and let her be a badass, awesome person in everything moving forward, or let her play like, you know, wild roles, because she clearly is capable of handling anything that you throw at her. I think she's so phenomenal in this movie, and to see her and Kyle, you know, because this is basically a two-hander. Like, there are other actors in this movie, but by and large, it lives and dies on their performances. And like, this is like lightning in a bottle. Such incredible actors doing incredible work with a just shockingly awesome script.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And Giovanni Ribisi shot this movie too, so that's another little interesting nugget about the film.
Right, and it looks gorgeous. Didn't know that was a thing he was capable of doing, but hey, you learn something every day.
I hope that this movie serves as Willa Fitzgerald's version of Dinner in America, like you said, the sort of launch pad.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I also quite like this director, J.T. Molnar's work. His first film is called Outlaws and Angels. It is a Western that a lot of people have very big feelings about because it handles some very, very intense, like trigger warning kind of material. But I watched it after I saw Strange Darling, before I was going to interview him. I was like, I want to check out this guy's other movie. And I was really, really impressed by it, like quite a bit. It takes some massive swings. It's painting like the ugliness of what the West was actually like, instead of, you know, trying to glorify it in ways that I think a lot of American Westerns tend to do. Really, really impressed by it. Like, you'll hear it in the interview, but he's a guy who's very interested in tackling kind of fucked up stuff in his movies. And you know what? We need those people. And I think he does a really good job at it.
Yeah, and you definitely see a little bit of that in Strange Darling. This is from some of the producers of Barbarian, and that gives you maybe just a tiny bit of a hint at like the kind of subversion of expectation kind of thing that you might be able to expect in this movie. It's so tough to talk about this, BJ, because there are so many things that I want to say. There are so many movies that this reminds me of, or like sections of movies that this reminds me of, that I want to mention now, but I won't, because I want to protect this experience for people. This is like a small scale movie. I think I'm comfortable in saying, do you remember in the 90s, post Tarantino, there was that whole period where there seemed to be this gigantic wave of movies where Tarantino was so hugely influential that he kind of like infected indie cinema in a way where there were so many movies that were clearly trying to copy his aesthetic and the rat-a-tat-tat nature of his dialogue and the pop culture references and all of that kind of stuff, right? So this movie, Strange Darling, feels like the best version of that kind of synthesis that I've seen in a long, long time. And it feels like a period piece in a way, but also it's dealing with some really, really modern conversations and stuff. So I thought it was just a cool blend of those two things. Like, I don't know, some people may be allergic a little bit to that sort of Tarantino-esque thing, but this movie, again, without really spoiling anything, it has like an unconventional structure that reminds me superficially of Tarantino, but also, yeah, just like the fact that it's playing with your expectations, it's playing with these tropes that we've seen in movies a million times before, but also like digging into like some pretty serious conversations that are actually being had right now. So I don't know. What do you make of that comparison?
So I definitely see exactly what you're saying. I mean, this isn't a spoiler, but the film is broken apart into chapters. And so that is something that I think a lot of people associate with Tarantino. But what I will say, like, really won me over with this is that the Tarantino relationship is obviously very much there. But instead of it feeling like this is Tarantino-esque, it feels like Tarantino and J.T. Mulner are pulling from the same like common ancestor, so to speak.
Oh, that's a good
like,
way to say.
They are both clearly influenced by the same like exploitation films and like ultra-violent films of the 1970s. And so because of that, there are going to be similarities that are kind of like impossible to avoid, but they're both doing very different things with their inspirations, which I like really, really love, because exploitation cinema is like my favorite subgenre of film. And mm-hmm. So seeing this movie, which like you said, feels like it is almost like a period piece, but is having like a very contemporary conversation, like that like just delights me, because there really are not exploitation films being made today. Like they just kind of don't exist outside of like Lifetime, but that's an entirely other soapbox. Yeah. And I'm deadly serious. I'm not trying to be funny. Like Lifetime absolutely is exploitation cinema, but this movie is just so bold and so creative, and it's also beautiful to look at, and mm-hmm. it just keeps you on the edge of your seat, and it's such an exciting surprise. This movie that I didn't even know existed until very recently, like shot to the top of like, this is one of my favorite movies I've seen this year.
Yeah. And not for nothing, it's 96 minutes too. So I know that's
God,
a big...
we love it. We love a 96 minute movie.
Okay. So anything else you want to say before we get into your interviews? I mean, there's not really much we can say, but is there anything where you're still able to keep it vague that you wanted to, you want to set up for folks who might be interested in watching this?
The only thing that I will say to keep it vague is that this movie is also like very sexy, and then may make you rethink you finding this movie sexy. And those are also exciting movies to watch. So, you know, don't watch it with your parents unless you want to have awkward conversations.
Yeah, very much so. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into your interviews.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles, including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health, or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
All right. First up, you had a chance to speak with Willa Fitzgerald. I don't know if there's anything that you want to say in terms of setting this up, or if we should just jump right into it. What do you think?
Oh, I think we can jump right in with Willa. She was like so excited to talk and was thrilled that I loved the movie.
Okay, here is BJ's spoiler-free conversation with Willa Fitzgerald.
I first just want to say, what a performance. Oh my God. Thank you. So getting that compliment out of the way, but what was it about this character that attracted you to the role, of course, without spoiling anything?
I think it was really just the script. I mean, there is the first time we read the script, I remember kind of being overcome with a feeling of like really needing to do this job and also being very afraid to do this job and not knowing if I would get the job. and it was just, it's just one of those scripts where you read it and you're like, ooh, I like, there is something undeniable here. This director and this writer clearly know exactly what they want to do. And I think I have an interesting thing to add to it. And I feel just very lucky that I got the job and we're talking today.
Fantastic. And I love that by having you and Kyle play against each other, these are two actors that I think horror fans have kind of claimed as like you all are part of us. We love your work. You consistently play in our sandbox. So I think a lot of horror fans are very excited to see that. But I'm curious, this is such an intense movie, and there is clearly a lot of trust that is like palpable on screen between you and Kyle. So how were you able to develop that in order to make this project the best it could possibly be?
Yeah. Well, I think as soon as I found out that he was going to be the demon, I think we had a phone call before we even got to Oregon. And then as soon as we got to Oregon, we were like hanging out as much as we possibly could in the kind of like week of prep that we had once we got there. And I think we just kind of, honestly, I think we kind of just got lucky. Sometimes you kind of just like meet somebody and you're like, oh yeah, I like you. And I think we kind of quickly developed a friendship that served us really well over the course of shooting, because there was sort of an implicit level of trust and comfort with the other person that, you know, in a lot of moments in this movie, is really essential in terms of feeling safe to kind of go crazy places with the other person. And, you know, we just had fun together. I mean, there were so many moments where we were just like, this is great.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I used the word intense already, but like, it's such an intense project that you could only believe that there must be like these great moments of levity to counteract that, because otherwise that shooting experience probably would have been very exhausting.
It was very exhausting, even with fun moments. So thank God we had the good stuff.
Oh yeah. There's, because your character also, there is so much physicality. There's so much running and jumping. Did you have to do any particular prep for that? Or were you like, I'm good to go. I was on Reacher. We're fine here.
Luckily I am a runner. And so I've done quite a bit of running. I didn't really do any physical prep. I think I'm lucky enough that I'm like still young enough where I can kind of get away with it.
That's great to hear.
You know what I mean?
So, you know, you've played a variety of different roles within horror at this point, especially when looking at like the Scream TV series and now with Strange Darling. What sort of horror movies are you attracted to? Or are you one of those actors that keeps ending up in horror that doesn't actually like horror movies?
No, I love horror movies. I was definitely like the kid who like watched scary movies like from like Blockbuster in the dark, you know, by myself. No, I've always really liked horror movies. And I think that as an actor, I've kind of found a new appreciation for horror, because I think, or genre in general, kind of doesn't have to be like straight up horror, because I think that there's, it gives you a lot more room to play. I think that there's a real, like expansiveness to playing a character in a world that's not totally straight up naturalism, realism, you know, living room drama. And I just find that exciting. I feel like it's really freeing. And I also love how the best horror movies are allegories. And I grew up reading a lot of like folk tales and stuff like that. And I think that there's something really beautiful about kind of like leaving it up to the audience to find their own interpretation of the thing they've just watched. And so I think that's why I love watching them and now making them.
Oh, definitely. Horror is always a response to the anxieties of a time period. And I think Strange Darling is such a important movie to speak to what I think a lot of people feel like these days. So that's, you know, very, it's very exciting to see this movie be in conversation with our real world. But I only have time for one more question. So I would love to ask you, and again, without spoiling, what sort of conversations are you hoping Strange Darling is going to inspire among people who have seen it?
I mean, I think that like, I think that it's exciting and kind of lovely that we're not talking super specifically about the movie and like my particular interpretation of it, JT's particular interpretation of it, because I think that I'm really interested, having sat with this movie now for 2 years, to hear what people think. Because obviously I have all of my own opinions and feelings and process that I went through. But I think that the movie has a lot of questions that it asks and it doesn't give you an answer. And I'm really interested kind of in what you were just saying, to like see how different people read this movie, to see how different people interpret it. And then hopefully in a few weeks, there'll be some more opportunities for, you know, us to kind of have another conversation after some more people have seen it and kind of talk a little bit more, you know, holistically about what's going on.
Absolutely. Those are the conversations I have just been chomping at the bit to have ever since I've seen them. Like, I need everyone I know to see this because I need to have conversations with people about
this. Good. I love that.
Well, congratulations on a fantastic film. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, I appreciate it.
And then you also had a chance to talk to J.T. Mulder. And this is a director that I was not familiar with. But yeah, especially after you mentioned he directed that sort of messed up Western, I'm very curious to go back now and explore some of his other work. So I will definitely be doing that. Hopefully our listeners will be interested as well. Any other setup you wanted to mention before this conversation?
All I want to say is he is such a generous interview. Sometimes when you're interviewing folks, you can tell that they either don't want to stray away from like their media trained approve answers, or they only want to give you like 1 to 2 sentences. Like, I only got to ask like 2, maybe 3 questions because he just gave me such rich answers. And I just wanted to sit there and let him keep talking. I was like, this is fascinating. Keep going. I'm not interrupting you.
Awesome. I love it when that happens. Okay. Well, here's BJ's conversation with J.T. Mulder.
The first question that I have for you is that now that I am familiar with not just Strange Darling, but also your previous work with Outlaws and Angels, you have a penchant for telling very extreme stories. So I'm very curious to know where that fascination comes from.
I think it's always been hard for me in life, in anything I do. And making films is of course what I love the most now and has been for a long time, but in anything I do, I have to do it all the way or I don't want to do it at all. So it's interesting with, some people I know are prolific and they direct a movie every year or something. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to do that. Like after I finished this one, it was so much of my blood and my soul was on the ground that I felt like I had to go take a job as a writer so I wouldn't, you know, so I could recharge. And now I really can't wait to direct a new movie. But I just like going all the way. And I think that when I was a kid and I was being introduced to certain types of cinema, I liked so many different types of cinema. I like everything from Young Frankenstein to Babe the Pig to Goodfellas to, you know, like all different types of films, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But the movies that made me want to make movies were the movies that upset me or disturbed me or made me sad. And I noticed that if I left a movie theater not conflicted or happy and I felt content, I wouldn't remember those movies. So I remember there were a lot of films, I think, you know, I don't even think about it as often as I should, but movies by, you know, David Cronenberg. I don't know if his style is the person I'm influenced by the most visually all the time. I love his style, but I just remember going to see the movie Crash in the theater and thinking, whoa, like this is possible. Like what is somebody made a movie about this and it disturbed me and it excited me. And it sort of lit me on fire. And I remember leaving the theater and telling my dad when I went to see that movie, my mother was traumatized. I was well old enough to watch a movie like that, but she was like, well, I heard that movie was awful. And, you know, once I got out of that movie, I remember saying, I want to make people feel that way with my art. Like I want to stir people up and make them think. And so to be provocative and extreme without being exploitative and gratuitous and just doing it to do it was always like the balance I'd love to try and find. And finding, you know, something where story and characters work, but we also kind of push those characters to the edge. And all of us get to watch them, see how they'll behave under that, in that pressure cooker. You know, that's just what turns me on as a filmmaker. I don't always need to watch those movies every time I watch a film, but as a filmmaker, I've just always been drawn to that.
I mean, you never forget your first like car crash fetishist movie. You can't. No. It's impossible.
No. I mean, I even remember seeing things like, you know, that's a really extreme example. And so many people don't even like that movie, but I think it's just a brilliant film. But, you know, just watching things like Blood Simple growing up and mm-hmm. Bound and a lot of the great films from the 70s that we've been talking about, like The Devils and just, you know, in all different genres. I remember even watching a movie like Five Easy Pieces and thinking, wow, what's this ending even mean? And is that where it's going to go? You know? And so I just always knew that if I was going to make movies, I wanted to make people think and make them conflicted, because humans are conflicted and life doesn't happen in one genre. So it's been the goal. And I think that Outlaws and Angels and Strange Darling are very different movies, but definitely exploring the extremes of certain things in different ways in both films.
And a lot of the films that you're mentioning, Crash, Blood Simple, Bound especially, these are movies that, you know, when they first came out, critics and audiences weren't necessarily on the same page, but in many, many years, they've been, you know, sort of reclaimed and reassessed as these like brilliant masterpieces that are really, really saying something. So how do you feel as a creative knowing that there is a possibility that it might be 15 years for someone to go, wow, this is the most brilliant thing I've ever seen. Why weren't we all talking about this?
I kind of, for a while, I thought that's just, because so many of the movies I like are so divisive, you know, and mm-hmm. And you know, they talk about tomato scores and all this stuff, and I'm always like, well, you know, if every critic likes something, I'm not into it. You know, I usually feel like stuff I gravitate towards is very divisive, and I don't think I make things that can be upsetting. Like I'm attracted to making things that can be upsetting, so they can be divisive. And obviously, my first film was very divisive. Critically, but I would say that, you know, you never know what'll happen. Even though I think Strange Darling is very divisive, it's been so far, thankfully, it hasn't come out yet to the public, but so far it's been very universally accepted and enjoyed, you know. And I'm not sure why it wasn't intentional. I thought it would upset a lot of people, but I think with Strange Darling, we wanted to really candy coat the movie and make it a ride, you know. And I think that there's something to say about upsetting people, but if you can upset people while they're sort of having fun in the way that you have fun on a roller coaster, right? Like it's terrifying when you're going down that first big dip or you're going through a major corkscrew, but it's also fun and it's thrilling and it's exhilarating. And so this movie was always meant to be a ride. And I think that it's been really nice. Like hopefully when it comes out, everybody likes it or a lot of people keep liking it because the idea of not having to wait 15 or 20 years for people to like your stuff is sort of appealing to me right now. And I'm really grateful that people are enjoying the film.
Yeah, I mean, Strange Darling has been sort of like the best kept secret within horror fans. Of the people who saw it, you know, they're sort of verbally passing it along the same way we used to like do tape trading back in the day of like, oh, you've got to see this. And, you know, what's nice is everyone's been keeping, you know, the secrets of why the movie is so interesting a secret, which is very, very exciting. But I have time for one last question. So what sort of conversations are you hoping that Strange Darling elicits from audiences after they have left the theater?
My honest answer to that is just any conversations, because I really, you know, I've been asked a few times, like, what were the intentions of this character in the final scene, or what's going on here for you? And it really is important to me not to answer those directly, because I love that I'm seeing so many people react to the film in their own way. Like, I have my, you know, the main objective of the film was to do always be doing something surprising and defiant and subversive. So it was a narrative exercise for me. It wasn't about, you know, it was about making you feel something, not teaching you something. So I was never thinking about in the foreground, I was never thinking about a lesson here, or this is what people are like, or that. I just wanted to play with subversion and audience expectations and stereotypes, and the stereotypes we put on people. And, oh, maybe there's more to this person's story. Maybe there's more to this person's story. And really playing in that, you probably saw it in Outlaws and Angels too, moral ambiguity, like showing that people, even the extremes, serial killers, you know, in this movie, our serial killer, it's nobody's all good or all evil. You know, there's all these nuances. And so that's what, throughout this entire film, we wanted to set up expectations and then break them down and subvert them and surprise you. And so at the end of the movie, when I'm sitting in the back of an audience and I see an audience watch the movie and I hear them react and the movie ends and I hear them arguing about what the meaning was of that ending or a certain scene or what the movie was saying, that's what I like. I just want people to have dialogue, and I don't want to tell them what dialogue to have or what they're supposed to feel. I just want them to feel, you know, and it's going to be different for everybody.
Incredible. Well, if that was your goal, obviously it's not out yet, but I would say mission accomplished, because I definitely felt something in watching it.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you so, so much for chatting with me today, and have a fantastic release, and congratulations again.
I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
All right. Hopefully you enjoyed those conversations. Strange Darling hits theaters tomorrow, or technically tonight in some areas. So check your local listings and definitely be sure to seek this movie out. It's a really special one. You can find more about the movie at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Spotify, you know the drill, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you haven't done that yet, please do it. It would really help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles, including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah,
all for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle, available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.